Ayrım 20.
All we find is rats and mice. Perhaps we should search those sheds outside. I'm sure we could get some of those hobbits to help us.
Well, this is worse than Mordor. It's much worse in a way. Well, it comes home to you because it is home, and you remember it before it was all ruined.
Yes, this is Mordor.
Oh, no, not Mordor.
Saruman! Shocking.
So you have heard my other name, have you? All my people used to call me that in Isengard, I believe. A sign of affection, possibly. I have looked forward to meeting you, Mr. Baggins, but evidently you did not expect to see me here.
No, I did not. But I might have guessed you were yet capable of a little mischief in a mean way.
Quite capable, and more than a little. I've done much that you will find it hard to mend or undo in your lives, and it will be pleasant to think of that.
Well, if that's what you find pleasure in, I pity you. But it will be a pleasure of memory only, I fear. Go at once and never return.
I will if you will ask those little rats crowding the doorway to this hole to let me pass.
Well, you ask them, Saruman.
Kill him! Kill him! Do not think that when I lost all my goods, I lost all my power. Whoever strikes me shall be accursed. And if my blood stains the Shire, it shall wither and never again be healed.
Do not believe him, hobbits. He has lost all power save his voice. And that can still daunt you and deceive you if you let it. But I will not have him slain. It is useless to meet revenge with revenge. It will heal nothing. Go, Saruman, by the speediest way possible.
Well, let's make sure he goes, Mr. Frodo.
Yes, Sam.
Worm! Worm!
Coming, Master.
To the road again, Worm. These fine fellows and lordlings are turning us adrift again. Come along. Here's one last little remembrance for you, Mr. Baggins. Oh.
So you try and stab my master, would you, Saruman? Will you try your last trick?
No, Sam. No. Do not kill him, even now. For he has not hurt me, you see. His blade failed against my dwarf mail. And in any case, I do not wish him to be slain in this evil mood. He was great once, of a noble kind that we should not dare to raise our hands against.
You are wise and cruel, halfling. You have robbed my revenge of sweetness, and now I must go hence in bitterness, in debt to your mercy. I hate it and you. But do not expect me to wish you health and long life. You will have neither. That is not my doing. I merely foretell. Come, Worm. Come.
Wormtongue. You do not need to follow him. You can have rest and food here a while until you are stronger and can go on your way.
Come on, Worm.
Let him go, Wormtongue. I know of no evil that you have done to me.
No evil.
Oh, no. Didn't you wonder, Mr. Baggins, what had become of your cousin Lotho? You know, don't you, Worm? Will you tell them?
No. No.
Then I will. Worm killed Lotho, poor little fellow. Nice little Lotho. Didn't you, Worm? Stabbed him in his sleep, I believe. Buried him, I hope. The Worm has been very hungry lately. Worm is not really nice. You had better leave him to me.
You told me to. You told me to do it.
You do what Sharky says always, don't you, Worm? Well, now he says, follow.
And let leave go of me, Worm.
The Worm has turned, Saruman. Die! Die!
Look at Saruman's body. There's a grey mist gathering about it.
Something ghastly is happening to him. Look at his face. It's shriveled to rags of skin upon a hideous skull.
No more beatings now, Saruman. Poor old Grievous, free of him at last.
won't let him get away.
No more killing.
Oh, and that's an end to that. That's a nasty end for both of them, and I wish I needn't have seen it. But it's good riddance.
And the very last end of the war, I hope.
Yes, I hope so too. The very last stroke. Oh, but to think that it should fall here at the very door of Bag End. Among all my hopes and fears, I never expected that.
Well, I shan't call it the end till we've cleared up the mess, and that'll take a lot of time and work. Come on.
It took less time than Sam had feared. One of the first things done in Hobbiton was the clearing of the hill and Bag End and the restoration of Bagshot Row. The gaffer was reinstalled in number 3.
Well, it's an ill wind as blows nobody no good, as I always say. And all's well as ends better.
Well, we should give the place a new name. What about Battle Gardens?
Oh, elves and dragons, Mr. Merry. It don't need to be called nothing fancy. Simply call it New Row.
Very sensible and hobbit-like, Mr. Gamgee.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it'll only ever have one name.
Oh, what's that, Pippin?
Sharky's End.
Oh. Well, now things really are beginning to get back to normal.
Except for the trees, Mr. Frodo. They're a grievous loss.
Yeah, Gaffer's right. We only need to think that it'll only be my great-grandchildren who'll see the Shire as it ought. Why, you ninny hammer, Sam Gamgee.
What is it, Sam?
Oh, the box that Lady Galadriel gave me. Why didn't I think of it before? And me carrying it all the way from Lothlorien to here.
I wondered when you'd remember it, Sam.
Well, let's have a look at it.
Hang on. Here we are.
Well, open it up, Sam.
What's inside, Sam?
Oh, it's dust. Soft, fine, grey dust. And a seed. It's like a small nut with a silver shale, see? But what am I going to do with it?
Use all the wits and knowledge you have of your own, Sam. And then use the gift to help your work and better it. And use it sparingly. There is not much here, and I expect every grain has a value.
So Sam planted saplings in all the places where specially beautiful or beloved trees had been destroyed. And he put a grain of the precious dust in the soil at the root of each. And at the end, he found that he still had a little of the dust left. So he went to the 3-farthing stone, which is as near the center of the Shire as no matter, and cast it in the air with a blessing. The little silver nut he planted in the party field, where the tree had once stood under which old Bilbo Baggins had made his farewell speech to the hobbits of the Shire. And there, in spring, a beautiful young sapling leapt up. It had silver bark and long leaves. It was a mallorn tree, like those which grew in the golden wood east of the mountains.
Well, Sam, it must be spring in Lothlorien. The mallorn is in bloom.
Oh, yes, Mr. Frodo. Isn't it beautiful? And more so because it reminds me of the Lady Galadriel and the fair folk of Lorien.
It will be the wonder of the neighborhood, Sam. You mark my word. People will come from far and wide to see it. The only mallorn west of the mountains and east of the sea. Sam?
Sir?
Sam, I've been thinking, why don't you move into Bag End with me? Now, I mean, now it's all straightened out. It's far too big a place for a hobbit on his own. And a lonely place, too, now Merry and Pippin have moved back to Buckland.
Well, it's very kind of you, Mr. Frodo. I don't know as I ought to.
Oh, there's no need to come yet if you don't want to, but... But, well, you can't go on lodging with the Cottons forever. And if you came here, you wouldn't need to worry about the gaffer because he'd be close at hand.
Well, it's not that, Mr. Frodo.
Well, what is it, Sam?
It, It's Rosie, Mr. Frodo.
Ah.
Well, it seems she didn't like my going abroad at all. But as I hadn't spoken, she couldn't say so. And I didn't speak because I had a job to do first. But now I have spoken, and she says, well, you've wasted a year, so why wait longer? And wasted, I said. But I wouldn't call it that. Still, I can see what she means. And, oh, Mr. Frodo, I feel torn in two.
But, my dear Sam, how easy.
Huh?
Get married as soon as you can and move in and bring Rosie with you.
Oh.
There's room enough in Bag End for as big a family as you could wish for.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Mr. Frodo. I'd like it very much.
Good. That's settled, then.
And so it was settled. Sam Gamgee married Rose the following spring, and they came to live in Bag End. And if Sam thought himself lucky, Frodo knew that he was more lucky, for there was not a hobbit in the Shire that was looked after with such care as Frodo Baggins. But despite all Rosie's care, Sam grew concerned at the way in which Frodo seemed still to be bothered by a shadow of old troubles.
Oh, the wound aches. And the memory of darkness is heavy upon me.
Alas, there are some wounds that cannot be wholly cured.
If your hurt grieve you still, and the memory of your burden is heavy, then you may pass into the west until all your wounds and weariness are healed.
Where shall I find rest? Where shall I find rest? Where shall I find rest?
The following March, Frodo was ill again, but with a great effort, he concealed it from Sam, who had other things on his mind.
Congratulations, Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Frodo. This puts us in a bit of a fix, I'm afraid.
Well, why is that?
Well, Rosemary had settled to call him Frodo.
Oh.
But it's not him, it's her. So we don't know what to do.
Well, what's wrong with the old customs?
Huh?
Choose a flower name like Rose.
Oh, it'd have to be a beautiful flower. Because, you see, I think she's very beautiful. And is going to be beautifuler still.
Well, Sam, what about Eleanor, the sun star? You remember the little golden flower in the grass of Lothlórien?
Yes. Oh, you're right again, Mr. Frodo. That's what I wanted.
Little Eleanor was nearly 6 months old, and it was autumn, when Frodo called Sam and Rose into his study one day.
Sam?
Yes, Mr. Frodo?
Well, rather I should say Rose.
Yes, Mr. Frodo?
Rose, I wondered if you could possibly spare Sam so that we might go off together.
Well, Mr. Frodo...
Oh, of course, it won't be a long journey. I know Sam can't be away for a long time now.
Well, not very easily, Mr. Frodo.
No, of course not. But never mind. You can see me on my way, and I won't keep Sam away for more than, a fortnight, Rose.
That's all right, Mr. Frodo. Sam's looked after you all this time. Of course he'll go with you.
Oh, thank you, Rose. Well, I wish I could go all the way to Rivendell with you, Mr. Frodo, but the only place I really want to be in is here. I'm that torn in two.
Oh, poor Sam. It will feel like that, I'm afraid, but you will be healed. You were meant to be solid and whole. And you will be.
Oh, that's Eleanor wanting a supper. If you'll excuse me, Mr. Frodo.
Of course, Rose. Oh, and thank you. Now, Sam, these are the keys to Bag End, and these are all my papers and writings.
What's that big red book, Mr. Frodo?
Well, here, see for yourself.
The Downfall of the Lord of the Rings and the Return of the King, as seen by the little people, being the memoirs of Bilbo and Frodo of the Shire, supplemented by the accounts of their friends and the learning of the wise. Why, you've nearly finished it, Mr. Frodo. Well, you've kept at it, I must say.
I've not quite finished, Sam. Chapter 80 is still to be completed. And there will still be some blank leaves left. The last pages are for you.
On September the 21st, they set out together. It was a fair golden morning, and Sam did not ask where he was going. He thought he could guess.
Oh, bless me. But if that isn't the very tree we hid behind when the Black Rider first showed up, Mr. Frodo.
Yes.
Oh, I shan't forget this road, Nari.
Bilbo often used to say there was only one road. Still round the corner, there may wait a new road or a secret gate. And though I oft have passed them by, a day will come at last when I shall take the hidden paths that run west of the moon, east of the sun.
Oh, Mr. Frodo, it's the Lady Galadriel.
Gilthoniel, our Elbereth.
We still remember, we who dwell in this fair land beneath the trees,
the starlight on the western seas.
When the leaves are gold before they fall, look for Bilbo in the woods of the Shire. I shall be with him.
Oh, my, Mr. Frodo.
There rode Elrond and Galadriel. Elrond wore a mantle of grey and had a star upon his forehead, and a silver harp was in his hand, and upon his finger was a ring of gold with a great blue stone. Vilya, the mightiest of the three elven rings. Galadriel sat on a white palfrey and was robed all in shimmering white like clouds about the moon, and on her finger was Nenya, the ring wrought of mithril that bore a single white stone flickering like a frosty star. Riding slowly behind, on a small grey pony, and seeming to nod in his sleep, was Bilbo.
Well met, ring-bearer, Frodo, son of Drogo. Greetings, Samwise Gamgee.
Well, Master Samwise, I hear and see that you have used my gift well. The Shire shall now be more than ever blessed and beloved.
We greet you, fair people, and our own dear Bilbo.
Hello, Frodo. Well, I passed the old Took's age today, so that's settled.
Yes.
Now I think I'm quite ready to go on another journey. You coming?
Yes, I am coming, Bilbo. The ring bearers should go together.
Where are you going, Master?
Beyond the thundering seas, Sam.
Where? Well, I can't come.
No, Sam. Not yet, anyway. Not further than the Grey Havens. Though you, too, were a ring-bearer. If only for a little while. Your time may come. Don't be too sad, Sam. You cannot always be torn in two. You will have to be one and whole for many years. Oh, you have so much to enjoy and to be and to do. Come now, ride with me.
As they rode, it seemed to Frodo that he wandered long in a dream of music that turned into running water, and then suddenly into a voice. It seemed to be the voice of Bilbo, chanting verses. His last song.
Day is ended, dim my eyes, but journey long before me lies. Farewell, friends. I hear the call, the ships beside the stony wall. Foam is white and waves are grey. Beyond, the sunset leads my way. Foam is salt, the wind is free. I hear a rising of the sea.
You are come to the Grey Havens. All is now ready. Your ship awaits. The third age of Middle Earth is over. The days of the rings are past.
You too wear a ring, Gandalf.
It is the third ring, Frodo. Narya of the Red Stone. Narya the Great, the Ring of Fire. I too am a ring bearer. Though I wear it openly only now.
Wait for us!
Oh, Mr. Merry, Mr. Pippin!
What are you fellows doing here?
You tried to give us the slip once before and failed, Frodo Baggins.
And this time you have nearly succeeded, but you have failed again. It was not Sam, though, that gave you away this time, but Gandalf himself.
Yes, for it will be better for Sam to ride back three together than one alone. Well, here at last, dear friends, on the shores of the Sundering Sea, comes the end of our fellowship in Middle-earth.
Goodbye, Sam, lad. Take care of Bag End for us, won't you?
I will, Mr. Bilbo.
Goodbye, Mary and Pippin.
Goodbye.
You young lads really must stop growing, you know.
Farewell, good masters Meriadoc and Peregrine. And you, Samwise, faithful friend of the Ring-Bearer, farewell to you.
Namarie.
Goodbye, Mary.
Take care, cousin.
Yes. Pippin?
Goodbye, Frodo.
Sam?
Oh, Mr. Frodo, I thought you were going to enjoy the Shire for years and years after all you've done.
So I thought too once. But I have been too deeply hurt, Sam. I tried to save the Shire, and it has been saved. But not for me. It must often be so, Sam. When things are in danger, someone has to give them up, lose them, so that others may keep them. But you. You are my heir. All that I had and might have had, I leave to you, Sam. You will be the most famous gardener in all history. And you will read things out of the Red Book and keep alive the memory of the age that is gone so that people will remember the great danger and so love their beloved land all the more. And that will keep you as busy and as happy as anyone can be. As long as your part of the story goes on.
Mr. Frodo, my dear.
Now, go in peace. I will not say, do not weep. For not all tears are an evil.
Then the ring bearers went aboard the ship. The sails were drawn up, and the wind blew. And slowly, the ship slipped away down the long grey firth, and the light of the glass of Galadriel that Frodo bore glimmered and was lost. And the ship went out into the high sea and passed on into the west.
Guided by the lonely star, beyond the utmost harbor, I'll find the havens fair and free, and the beaches of the starlit sea. Ship, my ship, I seek the west, and the fields and the mountains ever blessed.
Don't be too sad, Sam. You have so much to enjoy and to be and to do.
Sam, my dear.
Well, I'm back.
In the final episode of J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, adapted by Brian Sibley, the part of Frodo was played by Ian Holm, Gandalf by Michael Horden, Aragorn by Robert Stevens, Bilbo by John LeMessurier, and Sam by William Nye. Merry, Richard O'Callaghan, Pippin, John McAndrew, Legolas, David Collings, Gimli, Douglas Livingstone, Treebeard, Stephen Thorne, Elrond, Hugh Dixon, Galadriel, Marion Diamond, Arwen, Sonia Fraser, Butterbur, James Grout, Nob, Hayden Wood, Saruman, Peter Howell, Grimer Wormtongue, Paul Brook, Sandyman, Gordon Reed, Gaffer Gamgee, John Church, Farmer Cotton, Alan Dudley, Rose, Catherine Hurlbut, and Eleanor, Harry Holm. Ruffians, John Bott and John Livesey. The narrator was Gerard Murphy. The music was composed and conducted by Stephen Oliver, and the singers were David James and Matthew Vine. Radiophonic sound by Elizabeth Parker. Technical presentation by Peter Novis and David Greenwood, assisted by Richard Beedsmore, Tim Sturgeon, Diana Barkham, and Paul Pearson. The series was adapted by Brian Sibley and Michael Bakewell, directed by Jane Morgan and Penny Lester, and produced by Jane Morgan.
Long years ago, in the second age of Middle-earth, the elven smiths of Eregion forged rings of great power. Then the Dark Lord Sauron forged one ring in the fires of Mount Doom in the land of Mordor. This ring he made to rule the others, and their power was bound up with it, so that they could last only so long as it too should last. And from that time, war never ceased between Sauron and the elves. Three rings they hid from him, but the others he gathered into his hands, hoping to make himself master of all things. Then was an alliance made against the Dark Lord, and Sauron was, for that time, vanquished. But at length his dark shadow stretched forth once more, and he sought again for mastery over the rings of power. One ring had come into the possession of Gollum, a slimy creature as dark as darkness, who kept it secret unto himself in the nethermost depths of the mines beneath the misty mountains. There it was hidden, even from the searching eye of Sauron, the Lord of the Rings.